You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple app or Google Play stores.
It's time for the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5.
Now broadcasting live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
When the world was a time of this and that, I was young, didn't know to hold it back. Now we're here in the world, something else. We can leave any day, call for help. We were gods, nobody was above me. The A on my chest like a Dolce. The A on my chest, put your fist up. The A on my chest like a chipmunk. Alvin, Theodore, breathe in, breathe out. Me and more, breathe in, breathe out. Never mind, it was time. Number nine, let the lies be line with a death wish.
Del Olalea, today Will Kunkel filling in for Dell here on ESPN Radio on a Victory Monday. Houston, let's go. Let's rock. The Rockets win. The Texans win. Are the Texans the most dangerous team in the NFL right now? Sounds like a crazy question for a team that's 7-5, not even winning the division, but I can guarantee you there's not a team in the NFL that is looking at this Texans team, the way they're playing, the way they've won four games in a row. They've won five out of their last six. There is no way any team in the NFL right now wants to play the Houston Texans. They have the best defense in the NFL. They have an offense that is figuring it out in the right spots at the right time. Yesterday, they did some things when they needed to do them most. We're going to dive into that. So I ask you, are your Houston Texans the most dangerous team in the NFL? Here's what your quarterback said coming off of a concussion. Hadn't played in a month. He's back. He throws for 276. C.J. Stroud says what?
In one-score games were a problem for this team. What's changed now with four straight?
You cut yourself a couple of times. You start to heal, and you start to learn how not to cut yourself anymore. So I thought, you know, we did a great job, man. All glory goes to God. And I'm just grateful for this team, for, you know, our offense and our defense, our special teams playing together. So, man, it's a big-time win for us. We're going to keep it rolling.
You were on the sideline for basically a month. What was it like being back out on the field in this type of environment?
Yeah, I was a little rusty, you know, at first, you know, that earlier interception off of a turnover got cleaned that up. But other than that, I feel like I distributed the ball well, was accurate, put our guys' position. But it's not me without our protection, our ability to run the ball, and our receivers running routes and tight ends. So, man, it's a collective group, and, man, I think I've knocked off some rust and be back rolling.
Some people will say the season really starts after Thanksgiving. You guys have won four straight. How dangerous is this Texans team?
Man, we're super dangerous. Like you said, man, we've lost some close games against some really good teams. And, you know, if we find a way to win some close games going past Thanksgiving, you know, we'll be able to put ourselves in position, you know, to do whatever we want. So, you know, it's a great coach team, and we're going to see them again. But, you know, it's a grind every week, and it's hard to win the league. But, you know, if you can get it done, man, it's a blessing.
Good to have you back, bud.
Thank you, man.
Good
to see you.
Man, is it not great to have C.J. Stroud back? Is there anybody out there in Houston that wants to call in, text the show, get dialed in for their Davis Mills? You can call in, text in 713-780-3776, 713-780-3776. Are you still on the Davis Mills train? This is not me knocking Davis Mills. Davis Mills threw for 150-some-odd yards against the Bills. That offense went for 36 net yards in the entire second half against the Bills. In this first possession back, the Texans offense nearly doubled up those 36 yards. In the first drive of the game, the Houston Texans offense had 13 plays, 64 yards, four first downs, which is twice the amount that the Texans had in the second half of that Bills game, but then again stumbled in the red zone and kicked a field goal.
The red zone woes continued. They were up and down, which, you know, honestly, I'll take the red zone being up and down versus strictly down as it has been most of the season. They were 2 of 5 yesterday. That's 40%. But the third down numbers, that's where I look and I see the greatest improvement with this team so far. And I think it's a bit of a building block. You go 6 of 13, 46% against the Colts. That's the kind of stuff you want to see. That's what I've been clamoring for from this Houston Texans offense all year long. I'm not asking you to average 28 points. I'm not asking you to average 25 points. I'm asking you, I said in the four games coming out of the bye week, 18.5 points would have been enough for you to be 4-0. Unfortunately, the offense wasn't nearly good enough. The offense was dog doo-doo. They did not get the wins against good teams like the Seahawks and the Broncos. They did bounce back and get some good wins against the Jaguars, against the Titans, and then the Bills. They're starting to play their best football against the best teams that they have played all season long. I always throw away kind of the first quarter of the season, though, because, I mean, the Rams game, yes, that's probably the best team you've played this season. But the first week of the year, like, get a win, but it's impossible to take anything away from it. No one knows their offensive playbook. No one knows how to tackle. The first quarter of the NFL season is a damn joke. The Buccaneers, a pretty good team. They lose to them. And then, of course, they go to the Jaguars and lose. So the first quarter of the season you throw away for your if you're the Houston Texans anyway. And now we're in that world where the Texans are playing their biggest game of the season every week. So last week it was the Bills. This week it was the Colts. Next week it's the Chiefs. And I know it's a cliche, and I know that every week it's the biggest game of the season, but this year it's actually true, because when you put yourself in a hole 0-3, you have to climb out of the hole. And while you're climbing, you're getting wins. And then you get wins against teams like the Ravens and Titans. The Ravens were so banged up. No Lamar Jackson. Half of their defense was hurt. You put up 70 points in those two games. So, like, can you really take anything away from those two wins? Not really. So you're still climbing. You're stacking wins. Okay, you take them because you have to get them anyway. You don't apologize for wins in the NFL. And then you go to the bye week and you're thinking, all right, let's find out who these Texans are. Let's see what they're made of. So they come out of the bye week and they lay an egg on national television, Monday Night Football, a late kick against the Seahawks, get absolutely mashed in that game. You come home, you take on the 49ers, a good win against an okay team, certainly banged up, but again, apologize for nothing. And then the Broncos, the defense looks good. The offense, dog doo-doo one more time. And then out goes C.J. Stroud with the Jaguars, Titans, Bills, but you get all wins, and now the Colts. And this is finally a measuring stick win. I've been talking about this all year as well. Where is your best win? Who are you beating on the road? You can't get any good wins on the road against good teams. The last good road win the Texans had was going back to 2023 when Matt Amendola hit a game-winning field goal against Joe Burrow and the Bengals. That was the last time the Texans had a good road win. Well, now it's yesterday. This is as legit of a win as you're going to have. And I think it lined up well. I went into this game kind of with the same mentality I went into the Bills game. I thought the Bills were a good matchup for the Texans. One, it's Thursday night football. You're at home. That defense completely swarms and overwhelms almost anybody when you're in NRG Stadium with that crowd behind them. The crowd is the defense is a step faster than the offense because the offensive line can't hear fertilizer when that crowd is actually loud and they show up and they make some noise, which Houston does extremely well, better than anybody in the NFL on a primetime game. Now, noon kickoffs on a Sunday, God wins. Everyone's at church. Or tailgating, which God's not winning there, but nonetheless, a little quieter for kickoff at noon. Maybe we can change that for the Cardinals game. But then you go on the road against the Colts, the best team in the AFC South, one of the best teams in the NFL, the best scoring offense in the NFL. They have never been shut down. They've never been held under 20 points in the entire NFL season. Jonathan Taylor does what he wants. Daniel Jones does what he wants. But I like the matchup for two reasons. No DeForest Buckner. He's got a neck injury. He might return this season. But not having to face him, that is a huge help for the Houston Texans, because we've seen them struggle against lesser teams like the Jaguars and Titans because they have a formidable front. The Colts don't have that without Buckner. The Bills don't have a pass rush either. So while the Jaguars and Titans certainly aren't as good as the Bills and Colts, the Texans looked better against the Bills and Colts than they did the Jaguars and Titans. And they obviously didn't look very good against the Broncos, who have the most sacks in the NFL. Couldn't cover last night, those sons of a guns. Like, they had that game covered twice. They were on the field celebrating the cover! And then they had the nerve to celebrate by winning by one in overtime. The spread was 6. Guys, celebrate the cover. Of course I joke. By the way, the Houston Texans, I believe, going into Sunday in Indianapolis, were plus 750 to win the division. They are now plus 310. They have as good of a shot as anybody in that division. The Jaguars, Colts, and Texans are fighting over the crown for the AFC South. They have a chance to actually win this, which is wild. After the way the offense looked, after the way they started this season 0-3. But now here we go again. Biggest game of the season coming up. And I don't like this one as much as I like the Bills and Colts, because this one reminds me of the Bills coming into Houston the same way that Houston's got to go into Kansas City. Sunday night football against the Chiefs in Arrowhead while they're fighting for their playoff lives. Certainly a less than ideal situation. Mapes, when do we got to take a break here? What time is our first break?
We can take one right now.
All right, let's take a break now. I want to dive a little bit more into this Colts game, more kind of with some more details, how C.J. Stroud played, how the defense played, how the offense played, and the fact that the officials are getting a lot more credit than they deserve. They were bad. They weren't great. But I think the worst call actually went against the Texans in this game. And the game that and the call that everyone thinks is so bad wasn't actually wrong. I think we just had bad camera angles. This is the Dale Ellie Show here on ESPN Radio 97.5, 92.5. Lock in, dial in, chime in, call in, 713-780-3776. Will Kunkel filling in. We'll be right back.
This is the Del Olalea Show, live from the Huntington Bank Studios. Here's Del Olalea.
Del Olalea out. Will Kunkel in. What up, Houston? What a victory Monday. Again, for the fourth straight week, the Texans win a game. They are 4-1 in the month of November. Your quarterback, number 7, back. C.J. Stroud goes 22-35, 276 yards. An interception, didn't score any touchdowns, had some opportunities, definitely left some things out on the field. I think that's a bit of a combination between Nick Caley, the play calling, the execution, and CJ a little bit being rusty. My biggest complaint of CJ in this game was early on not stepping up in the pocket, floating out of the backside, leaking out to the right side on back-to-back plays in one possession in particular early on in the game. I thought he got better. I think he's certainly the better quarterback compared to Davis Mills. How do you think he played? Let us know. Chime in, call in, text in. Here's what CJ thought about his play.
Early on, I was a little rusty. I thought, they really didn't give me no, like, big plays. You know, like, they were taking a lot of that stuff away. So, just, I thought I was very disciplined, you know, check downs and, you know, getting the ball to where it had to go. And then, of course, the interception sucked. You know, I got to just take care of the ball and, you know, put Hutch in a better spot and just flatten him out. But other than that, I thought I played really good. I thought, you know, every opportunity I had, you know, with the ball, I thought I, you know, made the right decision. You know, a couple plays I went back. But I thought, you know, I did a really good job of, you know, taking what the defense was giving me. You know, I think the type of team we have, you know, I don't have to be Superman all the time. And, you know, I got to just do my job each and every play. And I'm not going to be perfect. I'm never going to be perfect. And I trust myself. I know my teammates trust me. And that's all that really matters.
Yeah, man, I like what C.J. Stroud said there. He doesn't have to be Superman. And I think that's more not because of the weapons that they have on the offensive side of the ball and how good they are offensively, because I don't think they are that great offensively, and I don't think they have that many weapons. Obviously, they have some. Nico Collins in particular, who, by the way, set a nice record going over 4,000 yards in his career. And he joins a pretty nice group of Texans to have accomplished that. I'm trying to find that list right now real quickly. He had, by the way, he had five catches on 10 targets, 98 yards in this game. And he joins Andre Johnson, DeAndre Hopkins, Kevin Walter, shout out, and Owen Daniels to go over 4,000 career receiving yards. He's just the fifth Texans player to accomplish that in franchise history. So shout out to Nico, certainly their best player. And he seems to play well all the time when he goes to Indianapolis, whether it's that fourth down conversion on the out route on the sideline a few years ago, whether it was the opening play, was it 2 years ago, week 18, where he streaked down the middle of the field on the opening drive for the touchdown when they were playing for their playoff lives. So Nico Collins, bona fide Colt killer. Some other incredible stats for DeMeco Ryans. They are now 13-4, which is a .765 win percentage in divisional games since 2023. 13-4, that's a .765 win percentage since 2023. That is best in the NFL. He is the best. He has the best win-loss record by a coach in divisional games in NFL history with a minimum of 15 games coached. Now, granted, the guy that's in second place has done it for 58 games. John Madden is number two on that list. He was 40-13-5 in divisional games in his career. DeMeco Ryans, better with the win percentage at .765, but of course just 17 games. Does this mean anything to you, Mapes? Are you impressed by DeMeco Ryans being the winningest coach in NFL history in division games?
I'm less impressed that it's the most in NFL history because, like you pointed out, he's been coaching for 2 years and what, 10 games, 12 games? So yeah, that part isn't as impressive, but the number in itself, the 13-4, that's very impressive to me. And I think it's the reason why definitely they're still alive this year to win the division. I think it's a big reason, obviously, in 2023, winning that game in Indy that you mentioned earlier. Like, this is how they win the division every year that they're coached by DeMeco Ryans, and why they're in it this year is because he whoops up on the divisional opponents, and those wins matter so much. I mean, just think about the outlook of today's show. If they don't win this game, like it goes from this team is very dangerous and is a team no one wants to play to, oh my God, did they kind of blow it in Indy? So I think it's a big win, and I think you kind of saw all the good parts of having a DeMeco Ryans coach team on display yesterday in Indianapolis.
Yeah, I think their defense, this is a defensive-led team. And this is how you want to go about your goals in the NFL. The goals in the NFL, yeah, obviously you want to make the playoffs, however, but the goal is to really win your division every single year. And yes, before everybody drives off the road is freaking out, yes, the division has been down of late. The Jaguars have not been very good. The Colts were not very good in years past when they had their train hitched to Anthony Richardson, that sad sack of a quarterback. And then the Tennessee Titans, they just absolutely stink. Already eliminated from the NFL playoffs at 1-11. The Titans, Raiders, Giants, Saints, Cardinals, all officially eliminated already from the NFL playoffs going into this next week. So,
and Texans play two of those teams, right?
Yeah. The Raiders, three of them. Raiders. Oh, no, they already played the Titans. Raiders and Cardinals.
And Cardinals, yeah.
Yep. Looking at the schedule, by the way, it's very interesting. The Colts do not have a favorable schedule.
No, they play basically all playoff teams or playoff hopefuls.
They play, going forward, the Colts have the Jaguars twice. So you assume you kind of split there because of the familiarity. The Jaguars are going to be playing for a lot. The Jaguars certainly are not a bad team. I think we need to get over this notion that the Jaguars are a bad football team. When they're 8-4, they're better than the Texans. They're not playing better than the Texans. Although they smashed yesterday. They took care of business yesterday in a convincing fashion as well. And the games that they were winning, they're putting up points. They've scored more points than the Texans have. And anyone else say, oh, it's the Titans. Well, look, did you see what the Texans did against the Titans?
Yeah, they outside the fourth quarter back in, what was that, week 4?
Yeah.
They really, there's not a big difference between the Texans and Titans on the scoreboard, at least.
Not even a little bit. They won 25-3 yesterday. If the Texans won 25-3, it would have been beautiful. But yeah. The Jaguars are not a bad football team. The Colts have a very difficult – well, I got the Jaguars schedule up first, so we'll take a look at them. They play the Colts twice. Then they got the Jets playing better football, not a good football team. Yeah. That seems dangerous to me, though. I don't know why. It's just one of those games you're like
– It's more dangerous than it was a month ago. It's like the Jets are – there's signs of life there.
And then they're at the Broncos. I don't think the Jaguars win that game. And then they host the Titans. That game is TBD. A lot of games right now are to be determined about when they're going to be played because the AFC South is going to be fun. I think the NFL set up the schedule actually pretty dang well for the AFC South to make some good national television down the stretch. The Colts have the Jaguars twice, one coming up this week, and then they go to Seattle. Good luck there. Then they host the 49ers, who, by the way, the 49ers are a much better team going forward than they were when they came here to Houston. They're getting a little healthier. They're getting a little bit better. Then they got the Jaguars again at their place in Indianapolis, and then the Colts end the season here in Houston. The fact that the Houston Texans go on the road and break serve against the Colts in their first game while trying to chase them is so big. It's one thing to hold serve, like, all right, good win. And then you look at the schedule like, dang, now we got to go to their place to end the season. Dude, that is, it's such an easier game having the Colts have to come here to play in NRG. It's, the Texans are a far better team at home than they are on the road. A far better team. And that's a shout out to the city of Houston for the environment that they create. But if they make that a noon kickoff, maybe not. City of Houston better show up for these games, by the way. So the Colts have a very difficult schedule going forward. The Texans' schedule is better than the Jaguars, tougher than the Jaguars, not quite as hard as the Colts. They have the Chiefs. Do you think the Chiefs are formidable? Like, I don't think they're a good team, but I do think that this is not the situation you want to catch them in.
That's what it is.
The Chiefs, I don't want to see them Sunday Night Football with their lives on the line in Arrowhead.
After a loss.
Yeah.
You know, 3 days extra rest or whatever it is. But it's mostly the, like, it's a cornered animal, like, situation.
And it's a mischievous badger, too. Like, yes. That sucker is angry.
Yes. Like, this team, the actual Chiefs, like, team that they put on the field is not intimidating at all, really, especially for the Texans, because I feel like the Texans just, like, you know, position by position, like, I can see how they match up. It is just the situation of, like, I don't think the Chiefs are going to go out that sad with back-to-back losses and completely follow the playoff picture. So this is the worst time, I think, to catch the
Chiefs. Not only that, I think I'm still in the boat that the Chiefs are not, like, their demise is being a little bit over-exaggerated.
It's a lot of close game luck balancing out.
Look who it's against, by the way. Yes, their losses, so their record is not what we think. Where they are in the playoff picture, quote, in the hunt, is nowhere that we've seen them in recent memory. I get all that, so yes, there is a difference. But their losses, they've lost three of their last four games, and that's why everyone is freaking out. Okay, fine, fair enough. But they've also lost at the Bills by a score. They've lost at the Broncos by a score. They won at home against the Colts by a score. They lost in Dallas by a score. They have lost their combined three games by 13 points. This team is not getting blown out. They're not a bad football team. Just because the Chiefs aren't what we remember them as when they were winning all their Super Bowls and they were world beaters and they couldn't lose, that doesn't mean they're not a good football team or that they can't win a game. If anything, what they can do is win in prime time on Sunday night with their backs against the wall with a good team coming in, because that's what they've done. And it's not because that's what they've done as much as it is they're not getting their ass handed to them every single week.
Yeah, no, they've lost five games by a field goal.
That's crazy. Now, this is kind of where I said there will be some regression in their record coming into the year, because last year they won games that they had no business winning with that Chiefs magic.
It was the 100% like best outcome possible every single time.
Now, so this year, it's the opposite.
It's the opposite. So,
and yet, they're still around.
Yeah.
But they, to be fair, they can't afford this loss. It's not a must win. It's not a must win. I'm just saying they're going to have to charge this to the credit card, this loss, and pay it off later and get some wins. Like, they can still afford it, but they shouldn't really be taking it. You know what I'm saying? Like, just because it's Black Friday or Cyber Monday doesn't mean you should be buying that TV that you can't buy.
It's not a big enough sale.
Like, do you really need to put it on layaway? Come on. Is that the right financial decision? I just realized we didn't get into the Colts game at all this segment.
No,
we talked about it.
No, I mean, big picture, though, I do feel pretty good about the Texans.
Yeah, like this team.
Going through the schedules, like that. And it's not quite, because the Jag schedule is easier. It's not quite you control your own destiny, but you definitely control your own destiny when it comes to the Colts.
Okay, must win and control your own destiny are two of my pet peeves. Actually, I have three of them. One, it's champing at the bit. It's not chomping.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Two, you do not control your destiny. Destiny is uncontrollable. You control your destination. The Texans control their destination, although they don't, because the Jaguars, one of them controls the tiebreaker right now. But nonetheless. Yeah.
They control their own fate?
I think fate is on. You can't control fate.
Okay. I'm thinking of synonyms.
You control your destination. Yeah. You can't control your destiny.
Your
destiny is uncontrollable.
Your postseason hopes.
Fine.
Okay.
But can you? Yeah, you can control your hopes, but you control your destination. The third one was must win.
Like, yeah, must win.
It's just not a must win.
I'm kind of with you on must win.
It's just not right, especially because what if the Colts lose? What if the Jaguars? Although they can't both lose this weekend, one of them's going to lose. So you're going to stay within a game with a loss no matter what. All right, after this break, we're going to be right back here on the Del Olalea Show on 97.5, 92.5 ESPN. I want to hear from y'all. I want to know what you guys thought about this Colts game. I promise we're going to get to the Colts game in and of itself. We've been talking a lot of big picture. Text or call. The number is 713-780-3776. Will Kunkel filling in for Dell. By the way, if you're watching on YouTube or if you're listening on the radio, find my show, Kicking It with Kunkel, on YouTube. I went live last night, had a lot of fun with some viewers, chimed in, gave away some Socorro, did the whole nine yards. All right, we'll be back in just a couple minutes.
You're listening to the Del Olalea Show, live from the Huntington Bank Studios. Here's Del Olalea.
What up, Houston? Dell is out. He's on vacation this week. Well-earned and well-deserved. Will Kunkel filling in. Host of Kicking It with Kunkel on YouTube. Do me a favor. Go subscribe to my channel. Help me out, all right? Let's get into this Texans-Colts game. A little bit more the game itself. The defense proved, I think, one thing in particular in this game. So we know that the Texans have a very good defense, and we think it's elite. It's probably the best in the NFL. But they did it against the number one offense on the road. They proved that they can travel. They proved that they can win games without racking up an inordinate amount of sacks. I think this defense wins games so many different ways. They prove that they have what it takes. And that's why maybe this Chiefs game isn't as scary, but it's still Patrick Mahomes. But they don't have Jonathan Taylor. The Colts have some weapons on the outside that people don't give them credit for. And in this game, they were neutralized outside of third downs. That is one thing. There are a couple things. Let's talk about some of the negatives here that I don't want to gloss over just because they won. They've got to get better on third downs defensively. They need to be better on third and longs in particular. Overall, they were good on the game, allowing a 30% conversion rate, 3 of 10 against the Colts. But on one drive in particular, and I don't want to make too much out of one drive, but we have certainly seen this as a bit of a narrative throughout the season and giving up third down conversions, in particular, again, long ones throughout the year. I'm trying to find the exact stats. They gave up a 3rd and 9. Yeah, here it is. At this point, they had allowed 4 of 9 conversions on third down. Not a good stat. They were much better. They finished up fine. But on one drive alone, it was that touchdown drive. They gave up a 3rd and 11 conversion, a 3rd and 9 conversion. They gave up a 3rd and 9 conversion again, but that was negated by holding, by the Colts offensive holding. So they had to do it again. That turned into third and 19, which then turned into defensive pass interference. So another conversion, albeit by a penalty, which, by the way, my ass, dude. How in the world is that defensive pass interference when the ball sails 10 yards out of bounds? That was the worst call of the game. In a game where there were some skeptical calls. The extra point, I think, was good. I don't think it wasn't good. I think the view that we had was bad. When you look at the all-22 view, the ball's inside the uprights, albeit higher than the uprights. So you never got a really good view. So, of course, that drama creeped in. It was a bad defensive pass interference call against the Colts as well on Xavier Hutchinson that allowed the Texans to score. So that was kind of offset. The officials had some squirrely calls. I think by far the worst call of the game went against the Texans. Show this to a Colts fan and they'll lose their mind because they're ridiculous on social media this morning and last night. But that should never have been a defensive pass interference call. Derek Stingley is someone I want to talk about because he had a slow start to the year. He was not as dominant. I'm not saying he wasn't good, but he was not as dominant as he was as an all-pro last season. Yesterday, the dude was nails. He didn't allow a single reception in the game on his only target. He allowed one target. That's why some of these guys don't get the interception numbers you think that elite corner should have. 7, 8, 9 interceptions. Like, this guy has one. Derek Stingley only has one or two. It's because no one throws his way. He's on absolute lockdown throughout the entire game. He was on 28 coverage snaps against the Colts. He was targeted one time and did not allow the ball to be caught. He allowed zero receptions on one target in 28 coverage snaps. It's the fifth game that he has allowed fewer than 10 yards in coverage. That is the definition of taking away a side of the field or taking away a player if he's going to follow him on the field. Derek Stingley is so freaking good. To be able to do that is impressive. Now, Kamara Lassiter got beat for a touchdown. Kalen Bullock faded on one touchdown. He wasn't really in coverage. He's kind of like that guy that gets dunked on but was coming over to help. It wasn't really his fault. Kamara Lassiter actually had some good coverage on that play, and it still kind of got beat. Just good defense. What can you do? Better catch, better throw. But this defense, man, they look good. They show that they are the best defense in the NFL. Getting Jalen Petrie back was a huge addition for them. Jalen Petrie. Dude, I love that you are wearing the Guardian cap. Take care of your head. Take care of your brain. Take care of your future. I don't think it even looks silly. Do you even think about the Guardian cap? You're like, bro, what are you wearing? Do you think it's a fashion faux pas anymore?
No, I think it's kind of like, you know, a lot of credit goes to the guys 2-3 years ago when they started wearing those during games. Because 2 or 3 years ago, it was like a huge, like,
it was like a one-off.
What's up with that guy?
Do you remember there was a guy with the 49ers back in the 90s that had like a double helmet situation. He had like a hard cover on top of his helmet, and he had a history of brain situation or whatever. And back then it was like, huh, that's weird. Okay, whatever. These Guardian caps actually look squirrelier.
Yeah, I think I don't know. Maybe it's me getting used to it. Maybe it is something where it feels like they got better at, like, shaping it. Like, it doesn't look like basically a sock on top of a helmet, you know, anymore. It looks like an actual helmet, or at least Petrie's did.
I have the picture of the guy in the 49ers. I don't have the name of the guy, but he exists. I typed in on Google, 49ers player wearing double helmet. Which, by the way, got me.
I put Niners extra padding helmet, and it's all
Steve
Guardian.
Steve Wallace
caps.
Was his name.
Steve Wallace
did it. Steve Wallace helmet. Let's see. Yeah, so he had like a double helmet on. It was kind of weird. I wonder what I wonder if that provided much cover, protection compared to the Guardian helmets, because, you know, obviously, technology has advanced significantly, but nonetheless. Like, good for Jalen Petrie to wear that. I think more players should wear it. Football is such a violent friggin' game. It is so bad for your head. It's so bad for your brain. It scares the hell out of me if I have a son, because I want him to play football if he wants to. I think football is amazing. I think it teaches some incredible life lessons. I think sports do in general. You know, it doesn't teach character. It reveals character. I think all of that stuff is true. But, man, you can't hide the fact that what you do to your brain is bad. Like, it is just not good for your head. And the way that we teach kids to tackle and the way players tackle using their head and their helmets as a weapon is all bad. Anyway, good for Jalen Petrie. What the hell was Nick Caley doing going into halftime? Everyone's saying, everybody knows that you want to score before half when you get the ball at halftime. After halftime, yeah, obviously. And I think his goal was to do that. I think he knows that. I don't think he was trying to be conservative and not trying to score. I just don't think he knew how to go about it. And they did it well initially. And also, Jaden Higgins, when you get the ball, get your ass upfield, get the first down. Don't run east to west in that situation. Cut up field, get the first down.
I thought the Higgins one got overlooked because everyone was freaking out about the lack of, I guess, hustle or whatever. It felt like they were too conservative. To me, that I was shocked that Higgins ran the way he did.
He's not aware of this. Not aware. He's actually had, and I like Jaden Higgins. I think he's going to be good, and I think he had himself a pretty decent game in this game. What were his numbers? He had 5 catches, 65 yards, long and 19. I think he's going to be good, okay? Yeah. Everyone stop freaking out. His field awareness is not really there.
I would have liked to cut up field there.
Cut up field, get the first down.
He was like 2 yards short, 3 yards short.
The Bills game. Yeah. Had a couple plays where he needs to get his feet down. That's what good receivers do. I'm not telling you it's easy. I'm not telling you I could do it. Probably could. But he needs to. I asked him about it in the locker room afterwards after the Bills game, because he laughed. After one catch, he got his feet down because he was like, damn, finally, I actually did it. And he admitted that after he couldn't get his feet down, some of the guys on the sidelines were like, bro, like, can't get your feet down? Like, CJ gave him some grief, you know, all in fun. But his field awareness needs to get a little bit better, and situational awareness needs to get a little bit better.
Yeah.
So he just needs to get the ball upfield. But Nick Caley, the play calling, the lack of urgency, the lack of situational awareness, I just don't understand how you are in that situation when you had a minute 40-something? I'm pulling out the play-by-play right now.
It felt like they were scared to give the ball back to the Colts. It felt like they were coaching out of, like, our number one objective is to be the last team to touch the ball this half.
It didn't feel that. Yes, it felt like it was overwhelmed by the situation again.
Well, to me, it was a weird middle part where they weren't just, like, running it up the middle and running out the clock. It was like, let's make an effort for it, but also let's not give these guys the ball back with a minute left. I do think that it was overall just like, I just needed it to be a little bit faster. I'm actually okay with
being purposeful with what you're doing.
Yeah.
Like, have intent behind what you are doing versus...
There's a lot of looking around.
Hoping you're just going to end up in field goal range. Like, that's not the way it works. So the 2-minute warning hit, the Colts punt the ball to the Texans. The Texans get the ball back with a minute 51. It starts off well. They hit Dalton Schultz for 11 yards, first down. Then C.J. Stroud to Woody Marks for 3 yards. They're starting to move the ball. Minute 10 left. Now 45 seconds left. C.J. Stroud to Nico Collins, 11 yards, first down. Timeout, that's number 2. So you still have one timeout to go, 39 seconds on the clock. Then you go deep to Nico, incomplete, 31 seconds left. You go short, incomplete pass, 31 seconds left. You now gain nothing. You have a timeout. You have a whole bunch of time. You have one timeout, and you're at midfield. You need to just start chopping away at yards. And then he finds Jaden Higgins, who doesn't get do the job, but it shouldn't have come down to 3rd and 10 in that situation. And this is what I've been talking about all year long. I think the coaching was good in this game, so I don't want this to be the narrative of the Colts game, because I don't think it is. This was not poor coaching in this game. They didn't overcome poor coaching to get their best win of the season. I think Nick Caley called a good game. I think the offensive line played well. I think the offense is trending in the right direction. They played good enough. But too many times there are moments in big situations where the coaching fails. The coaching does not put the players in the best situation. And that was this moment. It could have cost them. It didn't cost them. So we're... naturally, it's not going to harp on it a lot. There probably will be a question or two this week to Nick about it, and maybe even D'Amico today when he meets with the media. But that can't go unnoticed.
Yeah.
Because good basketball teams close out halves. Good football teams close out halves. You run a good two-minute offense, especially when you have all the time. Like, there's nothing was working against you. You are at almost at midfield with 39 seconds to go and a timeout. There's no reason you shouldn't have ended up closer to field goal range. I'm not telling you you have to be successful. It just
give yourself the option.
Yeah,
to be successful.
Like, give yourself the option of, hey, we should want to be successful.
I mean, it's really that first play. Like, they run the first play with 1:51 left. They get a first down, which is, like, always the thing when you're running hurry up. It's get that first down.
This is the BS they tried against the – was it the Broncos? Who'd they go to overtime? Was it the Broncos game that went to overtime where they had no success offensively? No, was it – when they tried to score late in the game instead of going to overtime, and it was complete –
I think it was the Broncos.
It was the dumbest decision of, like, they had the worst offensive game they've had maybe in franchise history.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden they thought, hey, let's go for – they threw two incomplete passes.
Yeah, it was the Broncos. With Mills because they –
They were trying to all of a sudden get that first down and see if they could get things moving when they haven't done it all game long. And then the way they did it, they didn't run the ball on third down to keep the clock moving. It's those type of situations that – those coaching decisions that make no damn sense, a lack of awareness of the situation and how do you put your players in the best situation to succeed and win. That's what happened against the Broncos. Thankfully, this was the first half. It wasn't the second half. So it wasn't like a, hey, if this fails, we're going to lose. They put the Broncos in a situation to win the game because they didn't run the ball on third down. Mm-hmm. And they were trying to all of a sudden, fine. You want to see if you can get something going on the first play. Okay. It failed, incomplete. You tried again, like, let's not, but okay. It failed, stop the clock. Again, the Broncos had one timeout. They didn't run the ball. And now they do it again. It's the coaching decisions that are consistently in question every game, even in a biggest win of the season. And that's what sucks. Like, can we get over that type of stuff? It's stuff that X is hardly right on anything. Social media is hardly right on everything or anything. They're right on a couple things. One, the coaching has not been great in crunch situations. Two, where the hell is Woody Marks in the receiving game? Three, finally, Jalen Knoll is on the field in special teams. That's where X and social media's Texans fans actually get it right.
Yeah, the Knoll thing, especially as a punt returner, was
finally
crazy.
They rectified.
It was crazy that how long that went on. But yeah, I mean that to me is the Nick Haley warts. Like that's part of it.
And it's D'Amico too. Like D'Amico's the head coach.
He deserves
you oversee
some.
All of it. Yes. You have to take extreme accountability. He has to.
I'm putting it on Haley because he's the offensive coordinator.
I agree. I just think when it happens that often, it.
Yeah,
it's bigger picture even more than just Nick Haley, and that's the only reason I say that.
Especially because it's reoccurring. It's not like a one-off. Like it doesn't look like they've learned from it.
This is not a negative day for the Texans. This is a huge win. This is the best win of the season for them. But also, what are your thoughts? What's everyone's thoughts out there on that fourth down call? Call in, text in. We're going to talk about that on the other side of the break. 713-780-3776. It was the tush push, back-to-back plays, third down and fourth down. Did you like going for it? Did you like the call? What would you have called? What were your thoughts? Will Kunkel filling in for Dell. Find me on YouTube, Kicking It with Kunkel's My Show. Subscribe to the channel. We'll be back in a couple minutes.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.